a week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 22nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. My opening serve on Monday's show is Australian Open tennis. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Novak Djokovic and Naomi Osaka, who won the men's and women's singles titles over the weekend at the year's first major tournament. Craig Gabriel reports from Melbourne, Australia.
The love affair continues, and Novak Djokovic remains passionate about the Rod Laver Arena. The world number one has won his ninth Australian Open and maintains his record of never losing a final here. He outplayed Daniil Medvedev and claimed the prize in 1 hour 53 minutes, 7-5, 6-2, 6-2. The Russian had some small chances, but Djokovic was unrelenting.
It was very challenging for me to keep my mind serene and keep my focus directed into what matters the most. I mean, I have put a lot of energy and time along with my team to be here, you know, sitting with a trophy. So I'll take a lot of positives out of this month here in Australia and see what the rest of the season is going to look like.
The first set was vital. Djokovic jumped to a 3-love lead, but Medvedev leveled. But at 6-5, with the Russian serving to stay in the set, Medvedev lost serve.
I didn't play bad, but I didn't play my best level. Probably he made his game that good today that I couldn't stay at my best level. I cannot say much more than this. He was better than me today. Could have done things better for sure, yes, but I didn't manage to, so that's why I don't have the trophy.
Even though he broke at the start of the second set, he wasn't convincing, and Djokovic struck right back and got on a roll. The crowd had found their voice. The Rod Laver Arena was half full under the spectator cap due to COVID protocols, but the Serb fans were certainly making a noise. In the third set, like the previous two, Djokovic served first, so most of the time Medvedev was playing catch-up. Djokovic's high level of play was reaching another plateau, and with Medvedev serving to stay in the championship, Novak made no mistake on the first championship point he got. A high backhand flick saw the ball land in, and Novak Djokovic had clinched the title. It's his 18th career major, of which 50% have now come in Australia.
When you're a young tennis player, you know, I think 99.9% of players, the kids that get a racket in their hands and start dreaming about what they want to achieve is Grand Slam, you know, winning a major. I do enjoy it, you know, the success every single time even more, because I know that the longer the time passes, the more difficult it's going to become for me to get my hands on a major trophy, because you have, of course, new young players coming up.
He's now just two behind Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal's record. Naomi Osaka has become just the 12th woman in the Open era, which goes back to 1968, to win multiple Australian Opens. She defeated Jennifer Brady 6-4, 6-3 in 77 minutes to hoist the Daphne Akers Memorial Trophy.
I put them in my living room, actually, because for me, it serves as a really good inspiration. Like, during my preseason, I would look at the Australian Open trophy from the time before, and I would really feel inspired to try to win another one.
Brady had to serve to stay in the first set, but facing set point, she dumped a forehand into the net. It should have been a straightforward return.
Both of us, I'm sure, were nervous. I was definitely especially nervous. I knew I was going to be nervous. You know, towards the middle of the first set, I started to get a little bit more comfortable. And then, you know, I just didn't feel like I was playing my best tennis out there, which is unfortunate. But, I came a little bit nervous in the beginning.
And after that, you got the sense this final was done. Osaka raced to a 4-love lead in the second, and credit to Brady as she rallied a bit, but it was not enough. Naomi came up with a big serve on championship point, and Jen couldn't really control the return, and it went out as Osaka, with her face beaming, raised her arms in victory.
For me, my feelings, I'm really happy right now. I think this is a moment that I've been working for during the entire preseason. And you know, it's really weird when you get to that final point, you start trembling because you can think of like the what ifs. For me, I feel like I'm living in a what if right now.
Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Melbourne.
Hi, I'm Francis Tiafoe. You're listening to Sunny Side of Sports
on Voice of America.
American tennis player Francis Tiafoe lost in the second round of the Australian Open to eventual champion Novak Djokovic. The 23-year-old Tiafoe reached the quarterfinals in Melbourne 2 years ago, his best showing at a major tournament. Samson Omale joins us now with some African basketball news.
The 20-team FIBA AfroBasket 2021 qualifiers came to a close with only four nations undefeated, with the last window of the qualifiers taking place across two African cities of Monastir in Tunisia and Yaounde in Cameroon. Over the last 5 days, 42 games were played as teams battled it out for a chance to compete at this year's African Championship, which will be staged in Kigali, Rwanda from August the 24th to September the 5th. Four teams, including reigning African champions Tunisia, Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria and Egypt, outplayed their opponents, winning all their 6 games. For Kenyan men's basketball team, the Morans, they made history on Saturday night after stunning heavyweight Angola 74-73 in a nail-biting contest in Yaounde, Cameroon, to qualify for the FIBA AfroBasket 2021 tournament in Rwanda for the first time in 28 years. Coach Liz Mills of Kenya and Morans center Tom Wamkuta both said winning against Angola, regarded as one of the powerhouses of African basketball, was extra special.
We're so excited because we respect Angola so much. This is an African powerhouse. We came in knowing their pedigree, and I think that's why this means so much to us. Obviously, punching a ticket to Rwanda also is great, and we're very happy to be there.
For us, as Kenyans, as the Kenya players, it's been 28 years since we've been in the last AfroBasket, and for us to do it, to beat Angola, which is a powerhouse in Africa, man. A very great team, great players for many, many years. It's been a great honor for us to be able to do that.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Yo, 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 sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you so much.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As Samson Omale reported, Nigeria's national men's basketball team won all its games in Tunisia and was the first team to qualify for this year's AfroBasket in Rwanda. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the vice president of the Nigeria Basketball Federation, Babs Ogunade.
Well, I think we cannot assess those matches without going back to the ones we had in Rwanda. Because they are both a part and parcel of the AfroBasket qualifiers. We did well in the first leg in Rwanda. We won our 3 matches. But clearly, Nigeria being the first, being the number one country in African basketball, for now, other teams that we beat at that time came better prepared to play against us in Tunisia. Incidentally, they were the same teams we played because we were in the same group, and the same group over 2 legs. So we played with them. Of course, everybody came back more prepared to play Nigeria, which is always the case anyways. When it's time to play Nigeria, everybody wants to knock off who's on the top of the heap, which Nigeria is. Yes, it made us, it was a testament to how resilient our team is. Because, I mean, we started slowly. It was our first game. But we stepped up the gear when the game became tougher. And that's what this is all about. It's about knowing who your opponents are and just doing what you have to do to be victorious, which you did against our first adversaries, South Sudan. We beat them. The following day, we played against Rwanda. That's the host team. Yes, we became victorious also. And of course, our final match against Mali, we also came out victorious. So we stepped up the gear, we increased the speed and the intensity of the game. So we gave it all we needed to do to win the games. So it's a good assessment for us, like I said. And it also tells us that how much preparedness we need to put together, to put in place going forward into both the Olympics and the AfroBasket, for which we became the first country after the hosts to qualify.
Nigeria has two major international tournaments, the Tokyo Olympic Games and the FIBA AfroBasket Championship. How do you rate the chances of the team in these events?
There are no more pushovers in these teams. Be it Angola, be it Nigeria, be it Senegal, Tunisia, even Rwanda, the host. I mean, take for instance the wild card qualifiers, South Sudan, came second in that group. They beat Mali and beat Rwanda, the host. So, I mean, and they are just a wild card entrant. So, you just never know. There are no minions in basketball in Africa anymore. On a good day, if you don't come to the office, you get defeated. The only country that they have not been able to do that to is Nigeria. And this is because of the level of our talent and the kind of work, I must stress this, the kind of work the Federation has been doing in the last 3 years to get together a crack team of both the athletes and officials to take charge of our basketball in Nigeria.
Are there lessons learned from the Tunisia games that will assist the team in future tournaments?
One of the major lessons we have learned is that we cannot rest on our hands. We are not going to bed because we think that we are number one in Africa. Then everything is hunky-dory. No, we can't do that. And I say this advisedly. Ratings, numbers, and all of those things are just for bragging rights. Yes, we are already number one in Africa, both male and female. But I say it to you because I'm an athlete. I don't mean, I was an athlete and I understand how this works. Those numbers, we are number one in Africa, we are the best in Africa, they are just for bragging rights. If on the day you're playing against a determined team who are younger, quicker, faster, and have your number, you get beaten. Bragging rights don't win matches. It's scoring baskets that win matches.
That's Babs Ogunade, the vice president of the Nigeria Basketball Federation. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta joins us once again with another comprehensive look at the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sunny. Chelsea's boss Thomas Tuchel questioned English wing of Ghanaian descent Kalum Hudson-Odoi's attitude after subbing the 20-year-old on and off in Chelsea's 1-1 draw at Southampton. Mason Mount had rescued a point for Chelsea after Southampton went ahead through Liverpool loanee Takumi Minamino. Hudson-Odoi replaced his fellow countryman of Nigerian descent Tammy Abraham at the break, but was then hooked off with 13 minutes remaining for Moroccan winger Hakim Ziyech. He reacted angrily to being substituted, but Tuchel stood by his decision.
We brought in Hudson, but with Hudson I was not happy with the energy and with the attitude and counter-pressing. So we decided to take him off again because we demand a lot and we demand 100%. And I had the feeling that he is not right in this shape where he can help us. So it's the decision for today. It's a hard decision, I know, for the players to come on and off, but tomorrow, latest tomorrow, is forgotten, and he has all possibilities to start again against Atletico.
That was Chelsea's boss, Thomas Tuchel, explaining his reasoning for taking off English winger of Ghanaian descent Kalum Hudson-Odoi in the second half, having only brought him on at halftime. In other fixtures, Raheem Sterling found the net in the second minute, and that was all Manchester City needed to sink Arsenal and reestablish their 10-point lead atop the table. Manchester United also beat Newcastle 3-1, thanks to goals from Marcus Rashford, Daniel James and Bruno Fernandes. The Red Devils have now scored 53 goals in 25 games in the Premier League this term, their most at this stage of the top flight campaign since the 2012-2013 season, which was the last time they won the title. The Red Devils face Real Sociedad in the second leg of their Europa League clash this Thursday, before travelling to Chelsea next Sunday in the Premier League. Everton also produced an outstanding Merseyside derby performance to beat Liverpool 2-0 at Anfield for the first time since 1999. Richarlison gave the Blues the lead in the contest after 3 minutes, as the hosts lost Jordan Henderson to injury during a frustrating first half. Carlo Ancelotti's side then secured the 3 points when Gylfi Sigurdsson converted an 83rd minute penalty to ensure Liverpool lost 4 successive home matches for the first time since 1923. Here's the Reds' manager Jürgen Klopp's reaction.
We conceded a completely unnecessary first goal. Should not forget that. And that's a big part of the game. So there are two big parts. So you have to defend and you have to score. And in one situation, we didn't defend well enough so they could score. We made a mistake, if you want. And we didn't use their mistakes, or we didn't use the things we created. And that's why we have the result.
Klopp has suffered 4 consecutive league defeats for the first time since November 2014, when he was in charge at Borussia Dortmund, while he has lost 4 in a row at home in league competition for the very first time in his managerial career. The Reds are now 6th place, 3 points off the top 4, with Everton level on points in 7th, but having played a game fewer. Leicester also strengthened its position in the Premier League's top 4 with a 2-1 win at Aston Villa, thanks to an early goal by James Maddison and Harvey Barnes. Leicester, which is 6 points clear of 5th place Chelsea, hasn't played in the Champions League since the 2016-2017 season, the season after winning the Premier League in improbable fashion. West Ham also strengthened its unlikely push for Champions League qualification by beating Tottenham Hotspurs 2-1, thanks to goals from Mikel Antonio and Jesse Lingard. Days after routing Barcelona in the Champions League, Paris Saint-Germain lost 2-0 at home to Monaco to fall back down to earth and into 3rd place in the French league. French star of Cameroonian descent Kylian Mbappe, who was the chief tormentor of the Catalan giants, was almost completely neutralized, barely allowed a straightforward touch. Eventually, French footballer of Senegalese descent Sofiane Diop and Guillermo Maripane recorded their names on the score sheet to give Monaco victory against the Parisians. In other fixtures, a superb second half free kick from French international of DR Congolese descent Jonathan Ikone helped Lille ease to a 4-1 win at Lorient as they moved back to the top of the French league. Jose Fonte and Brodarich added a goal each, with Andrew Gravelin's own goal ensuring Lille kept up their momentum in the league to make it a club record 7 straight away wins in the top flight. Third place Lyon secured a 3-2 win against Brest, with French midfielder of Algerian descent Hossam Awar and Dutch winger of Ghanaian descent Memphis Depay finding the back of the net in the opening half to put Olympique Lyon on 55 points from 26 games. Moving on to the Spanish league, Barcelona's week went from bad to worse as Alex Fernandez's late penalty and Cadiz an unexpected 1-1 draw at Camp Nou in La Liga. Six-time Ballon d'Or winner Lionel Messi's 16th goal of the season, also from the penalty spot, had given Barca a first-half lead as they looked to bounce back from a 4-1 midweek defeat to Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League. The Argentine's goal moved him level with Luis Suarez as the top scorer in La Liga this season, while he also surpassed Xavi Hernandez as Barca's record appearance holder in the Spanish top flight. Jose Luis Morales and Jorge were on target as Levante consigned La Liga leaders Atletico Madrid to a first home defeat since December 2019 in a shock 2-0 win on Saturday. Casemiro also scored the lone goal as Real Madrid secured a 1-0 win against Real Valladolid. The victory was a crucial one considering that leaders Atletico Madrid had dropped points earlier in the day, with Real Madrid now moving to within 3 points of their neighbors. And in the Italian league, Belgian star of Congolese descent Romelu Lukaku provided an assist and a goal in a sensational performance as Inter Milan beat AC Milan 3-0 in the top of the table derby played on Sunday. Inter came into this match in first place and a point above Milan, who lost top spot last week following a short defeat to Spezia. Inter Milan are now 4 points clear of AC Milan in second place, and Antonio Conte's side lead Juventus by 11 points, though the Bianconeri could narrow that to 5 if they win their 2 games in hand. After consecutive losses to Napoli and Porto, Juventus returned to Serie A action hosting bottom side Crotone on Monday. And Prince Nesta on the sunny side of sports.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Turning to athletics, reigning Olympic champion and shot put indoor world record holder Ryan Crouser of the USA is looking to add the outdoor world record to his list of accomplishments as he prepares to defend his gold medal at the Tokyo Games. VOA's Gwen Ooten has the story. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. American shot put superstar Ryan Crouser has had a pretty good start to 2021. Last month, he broke the indoor world record that was set by American Randy Barnes over 30 years ago. Barnes held the Olympic gold medal in 1996, but he was banned for life 2 years later after failing a drug test for a second time. Ryan Crouser says it's time for the long-standing outdoor world record to fall, and he tells Reuters News he believes a record-breaking throw can be achieved by a clean athlete.
I think the sport is definitely the cleanest it's ever been, so if we can get in the new age of drug testing and retroactive testing, if we can get the world record to be thrown under the scrutiny that we have on present athletes, I think that'd be a great step forward for track and field.
Crouser first stepped onto the field as a very tall, very lanky preteen in Portland, Oregon. His frame was better suited for basketball, but Crouser said when he picked up the shot put, he was able to push the ball farther than anyone else. Athletes in the sport hold a heavy-weighted ball at their neck, and with a push rather than a throw, they put the ball as far as possible, thus the name shot put. A lot has changed for Crouser since he first took up the sport. He's now 28 years old and stands at 6'7" and 310 pounds. And with strong results in the indoor season, he has a strong foundation to defend his gold medal at the upcoming Tokyo Games. But Krauser said right now his biggest challenge is traveling across the United States to compete during the pandemic.
We've been lucky to have these American Track League meets here in Fayetteville. But, I mean, before that, I drove to Atlanta in the summer, 11 hours there to do a meet, did two meets there and drove the 11 hours back. And then a few weeks after that, drove 6 or 7 hours up to Des Moines, Iowa to do a meet. And then earlier this indoor, I drove out to Kansas State about 5.5 hours out there. So I've been piling a lot of miles on this, I feel like this year compared to a normal year where I'd be going over to Europe at those times.
And with breaking the outdoor record still on his to-do list, Krauser believes that goal is within his reach.
It'll come when it comes. In the past, I've been in shape to throw it and known that I can throw it going into meets. And I feel like that I've tried to force it to happen instead of relaxing and letting that big throw happen. So kind of changed my perspective towards it a little bit. And I'm going out there trying to throw a personal best, compete against myself. And if I do that, I'll have a good chance to win. And if I can continue to throw personal best, we'll get that outdoor world record.
All eyes will be on American Ryan Krauser to see if he makes history at this year's Olympic Games, scheduled to kick off on July 23rd in Tokyo. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Two South African medics are swapping their medical gear for oars as they train for a risky 4,000-kilometer journey by rowboat through the Arctic Northwest Passage. Franco Puglisi reports from Johannesburg.
There have been several attempts to cross the Northwest Passage by rowboat, but none have succeeded. A 14-member team, including two South African medics, are training to make history with their attempt planned for next year. Levin Brown is the expedition leader.
Nobody conquers a passage. The ocean allows you to pass. And there's a very important distinction there. We will be lucky to get through the Northwest Passage, to row from Pond Inlet, the top right-hand corner of Canada, to the top left-hand corner of Alaska, a place called Point Barrow.
In decades past, travel through the icy Arctic waters was only possible by large ship. Reduced summer ice will allow the team to row the passage, but the journey will still be a physical and mental challenge. The South African team member Daniel Lobeuil says such a long, confined journey will likely take a mental and physical toll.
We're going to be out there in the elements by ourselves, essentially. And I think after a certain period of time of repetitive rowing on and off for, you know, weeks on end, I'm pretty sure my mind might be the biggest challenge I'll have to overcome. So my fear is that encounter I'm going to have with myself.
Along the journey, Brown says the team will use scientific tools to gather data for climate change and wildlife studies.
We hope to be the first modern-day expedition through the Northwest Passage to highlight, you know, what's happening with the environment and the climate. This is the sort of expedition that wouldn't be possible, you know, 50 years ago.
Despite the history of failed attempts to row the passage, South African medic Dr. Daniel Kutzinger says the team is hoping to finish the trip within 2 months before the winter ice return.
There has been a previous team, I think it's 2013, that also tried to row the Northwest Passage. They were unsuccessful as the ice caught them. So hopefully the ice will stay back enough for us to finish and be the first then to row the Northwest Passage.
The team will launch another expedition to help them prepare. In June, they will row from England's Newcastle to Orkney, a much smaller distance than the length of the Arctic Northwest Passage. Franco Puglisi for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thanks, Franco.
And that
wraps up the February 22nd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.